There are a few more makaros that I will add. Yeah, primarily a couple of Rambams and Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim is found, I believe, on the Yud Pesvav, I think it is, or wherever that Rambam is, in Hilchos Macholas Asura. So if I don't send you anything further, that's where you can look for Reb Chaim if you finished everything and to do tomorrow. That's a fascinating, fascinating piece. And I don't want to say for once, because I can't tell you that I substantially disagree with most of Chaim's Chidushim, but nonetheless, this is one that I think in many ways is very much on the mark. So, be that as it may, I want to first try to get through the Gemara. We've been slowly slogging through here, and the Gemara at the bottom of Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, I think we're up to Tana Rabbanan. Who would like to read for me? Jeremy, go ahead. I'm sorry, yes. Well, what's... I'm sorry? Yeah. Wow. It's a very interesting choice of words. Why is someone who's nana without a bracha ma'al? Why is it described as me'ila? Because it belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. Kezego mikimim chahakol umiyadacha nasanu lach. I think it's the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. The part that I think we don't say in Vayivarech. The part we don't say in Vayivarech David. But that's what the Vayivarech, for those who are not aware of it, just file this in your liturgy file. Vayivarech David was David's praise to the Ribbono Shel Olam, his thanks, and his hakara after what was the, I don't know, maybe you took the very end with me, what was the historical few you did, what prompted David's bracha?
It was the end of his life.
That wasn't what prompted his bracha. What prompted his bracha, there was a specific stimulus that they had put out. I forgot already, Goldberg, huh? Put out a kol kore, you know, for the Beis HaMikdash, for collecting funds, and the response was totally overwhelming. And David responded by that. And that's why, L'cha Hashem ha'gdula v'agvura, and so on and so forth, v'osher v'hakavod milfanecha, and then later, the part we don't say, v'ki mimcha kol miyad d'cha nasanu lach, is a recognition, it's both praise for the generosity of Klal Yisrael in giving to the Mikdash, and it's a recognition that everything, all of our possessions, everything for the most part anyway, not just our possessions, are a product of what God has given us. So, in effect, based on that assumption, everything basically belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and if you benefit from that which belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, if you are Nehaneh, and obviously the choice of Nehaneh is because the notion of Me'ila is an Isur Hanah. So if you are Nehaneh without some from the Ribbono Shel Olam, you have violated Me'ila. Okay? So then the Gemara continues. And what is bracha, by the way? What is the bracha's function here? No, it's more than that. What is the bracha's function here? How do you avoid the Isser Me'ila? What? No. How? Pidyon! Think about the prior sigya. What? The bracha is a pidyon. That's what the function is. If it's hekdesh,
what happened to the chumash?
What's that?
What happened to the chumash?
No, I'm not arguing. This is a metaphor, obviously. Uh-huh. If a person eats without a bracha, you don't bring a carbon meal and a sham meilos. But the point is, in the metaphor, if everything in the world is considered hekdesh, and therefore one who steals, one who's nana without permission, is Moel, the way you avoid Me'ila is through Pidyon, right? Think about the previous sugya. It's a beautiful literary connection. It's not actually parallel. The previous sugya, you were dealing with Achle v'hadar Achle. You were dealing with Pidyon, right? The Pidyon there was a different function and nothing to do with this. But nonetheless, the notion here of Bracha is a Pidyon. David?
Isn't there another way to avoid Me'ila? Namely, to give the carbon or to use whatever...
So one of the Achronim says, I forget who says this, it's very clever. He says Where did I see this? I don't think it's the Sfas Emes. I don't remember who says that the reason why the bracha, not the way I'm saying that the bracha is a pidyon, but there's a din by Hekdesh that kol davar shenaseis mitzvaso sa ein bo mishum me'ila. Meaning the deshen, for example, excuse me, once it's been taken outside the mikdash, to the hotzas deshen, there's no isim me'ila anymore. In general, whenever you've done the avodas hakarbon, whatever's left over, there's no me'ila. And that's kol davar shenaseis mitzvaso ein mo'alim bo. There's no me'ila. So, if you remember the lashon of the Tosefta and the Yushalmi, Achiyatiru lo hamitzvos, so he suggests that what's going on here is when you make a bracha, the food now becomes a davar shenaseis mitzvaso, and there's no me'ila anymore. So yes, that's the other way of handling
is
Shlomo.
Is it Rishon or not? I have a question about this concept in general.
No, I'm pretty sure it's an Achron.
I know we brought something to say, you know, Hashem, a lot of things about things like that.
No, we haven't brought them yet, but we'll get them
yet.
Yeah.
What about, meaning, God tells Adam HaRishon that he can eat from the
garden. But he didn't say you don't have to make a bracha. But no, the point is that obviously this is not a... First, if you want me to take the question and, you know, answer it in a more serious fashion, I would say the Rabbono Shalom said, you know, to Adam HaRishon, what he was saying was not how you're going to eat it, but he was basically classifying what he was allowed to eat and not eat. For Adam HaRishon, you know, to eat meat with or without a bracha was asur. So the point is that that's not about how that. It's not that there's a hava mina that you should never be allowed to eat. But if it's lashem aretzum lo'a, so the question is why we are allowed to eat, why so or how so? And the answer is, you know, so we have to do something so that it becomes, you know, it's not sound of ne'adam. Yeah.
Below bracha,
meaning
in the Tosefta, at least,
that they didn't
really belong there. And then the continuation of the Tosefta. Had she had three little problems,
Ah.
Otherwise, you're talking, otherwise, like the same thing. That
it's being repeated, yes. Yeah, I hear. Okay. So certainly, that would fit with one approach, the idea that, you know, Dabba Shinase Smitsvaso and Maulimbo. Okay, Chaim?
Can the fact that the Me'ila is only metaphorical, and we don't actually have to bring a korban Hashem if you do be without a bracha, could that be used as a proof that the brachas anenin are only darbanim?
No, because even brachas anenin darais, it's not Me'ila. Me'ila means something that a person designated as Kodesh. Me'ila doesn't mean belonging to God, it means belonging to the Mikdash.
Yeah, but if it was Me'ila d'oraisa,
it could be Me'ila d'rabbanan, even though the chiyuv is d'oraisa. There are things that can I think of an example offhand? I can't think of it offhand. Where you might have, look, you know, you can have situations where Chazal are medame something to shvichos damim, and it could still be osur min haTorah, but it's not mamash shvichos damim or something like that. Eitan.
Very consistent with the opening
pasuk that they use. Yeah. So, well, in other words, but it's not actually parallel. But there, the background was pidyon. But then pidyon there had nothing to do with bracha. It just happened to be achle v'hadar achle is a different, you know. But fundamentally, the bracha there wasn't learned from the aspect of pidyon. The bracha there was about hilulim. You could have, by the way, hilulim. You could. One of the things that's interesting about that whole discussion there is that you don't have to redeem that revai. You can bring it to the mikdash and to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Right, so the pidyon there is incidental from a conceptual perspective. I think from a literary perspective, it forms a very nice connection between the two pieces.
Can you take it a step further and put it in the context of the
Pasuk
of the Torah?
No, because the Torah there says nothing about pidyon, really. I mean, at least for Pshuto Shal.
But in essence, isn't that what you're doing? You're redeeming the food by going. You can't eat it unless you're in Yerushalayim.
No, that's not redemption. That's... In other words, Master Sheni, in the revised pattern upon Master Sheni, you have two choices. You bring it to Yerushalayim, or you redeem it. It's not that bringing it to Yerushalayim is a form of redemption, because it retains its Kedusha in Yerushalayim. And you can't be tummy when you eat it, and so on, all sorts of things that apply to it, which don't apply once you poda it. Okay, was there a question? Passed.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So continue. This is, by the way, a very strange line. Go ahead. My
Rechaz al-Chacham, my Avila, Ha-Avila Yatura.
Okay, can anyone tell me what's going on here? Forget just textually what's going on. What is strange here? Something very odd. It's not something you have to say chidushim on, but if you're a sensitive reader, you realize something's askew here. What does it look like happened? Eyal?
It says the statement is that you're doing Ila if you don't do a bracha. And then he asks Mike to count if it happened already.
Who asked, Eyal?
Stop.
What? Is that a strange question? And when you get Rava Kam Ela Amar Rava Yelach Etzachachem, there's something missing here, because when you get to the Rava statement, it almost looks like Rava is modifying or tweaking the Brisa. But the problem is, Ma'itakante can't be part of the Brisa because it's an Aramaic. It's what it sounds like you have here is you had something. First, it could have been just been Ma'itakonoso. It could have been, you know, in Hebrew. It sounded like you had some addendum to the Brisa which didn't read straight literally, and Rav is coming along and sort of providing the Amoraic interpretation, you know, to straighten out a genuinely difficult Brisa. The problem is the language doesn't look like, in other words, the language doesn't look like it's part of the Brisa, Chaim.
I mean, could it just be that it's a Stam that's asking the question and then providing the answer, Yelech Etzal Chacham, knowing what Rav has said.
I mean, isn't it, even
but,
the question...
And only then later do they say, El Amar Rav, right?
Fine, what really yes, said. But the question is strange anyway. In other words, what would you have answered the question with?
Make a bracha.
And that's what it says. It says below. No, my point is just answer. Oh, so you think it works much better? Yeah, but and if it were part of the Brisa, you think that even here, it read v'chalanenam in ha'olam hazeh mo'al ma'ita kante yelach etzel chacham. That's not an answer to the question.
No, I was just saying the problem is even strengthening because in the statement itself
it says below bracha. No, I thought you were going back to. So that's the strange thing. Maita kante. The kante is make bracha. What's the problem?
I don't even think that's the answer. I mean, the Gemara says that you were mal. So maita kante, how do you solve that? Do tshuva, I don't know, something? Maita kante, say a bracha? You're already mal. You were already mal.
Yeah, but what's the answer that is then given? Go learn Hilchos Brachos. So
I'm
what?
Saying, I don't know.
So you make a bracha next time.
Next
okay.
Kante sounds like
you're trying to fix. What you're almost seeing is that the Gemara is saying that the way you do tshuva here is not by fixing that which you broke, but the way you fix that which you broke is by making sure you're not going to break it again.
Or just, I think the Gemara never says that you actually did it. It just says if you do it, it's
mal. Okay, so
the answer should be how to avoid it.
So that the answer would have been make a bracha.
What?
The answer would have been make a bracha.
Right. So the question, but the sounds like
this is a strange formulation. Yes. Yes. Jeremy?
Well, to build on what I was saying, maybe this is going to begin a little bit, but the next line is like Ilu, then in the quotation line, whereas here we have Ma'al. Meaning it's saying it's saying you really did something wrong. When you do Mi'ila, there's something that you have to do to fix that Mi'ila. Right? So here the Gemara is just going along with that line of reasoning. Not like it's as if you did something bad. Right? You did something bad that doesn't really have ramifications. No. It is Mi'ila. It's not Ki'ilu Ma'al.
And what are the ramifications?
Well, so the Gemara is just going along with that line of thought.
I like what you're saying. In other words, since you don't bring a carbon Mi'ila as Chaim thought you might, instead you do something else, but it's a strange kind of thing. You're not really fixing.
The answer is much worse than the question.
The answer is not fixing. You're not presumably when you violate Me'ila, you bring a carbon Me'ila, which means you bring a carbon Asham, you pay back Karen V'chomesh, and that's how you do tshuva along with it. Here you don't say the answer to Ma'ita Kante by Me'ila is not don't do Me'ila, right? Or do Pidyon first. The answer here is make sure you learn Hilchos Me'ila so you won't do it next time.
But that's the thing, the Gemara gives the proper answer, which is Yelech Etzal Chacham. Which, if you just stop there, that might actually be, the Chacham might actually be able to do something to fix the Me'ila that you committed.
Why? How is he going to fix it?
right? Just to make a parallel. And the Gemara steps back and says, what's going on here? Meaning that doesn't make sense. You're not going to accomplish anything by going to Chacham. In terms of what can you do now that you commit a Me'ila? You can go to Chacham. But wait, well, hold on, what is that going to accomplish?
Yeah.
It's not the Gemara's second thought about it, it brings in Rava.
Yeah, so what was it thinking originally?
It was thinking, this is Me'ila.
By Me'ila, what good does going to a Chacham going to do?
Well, that's what the Gemara is bothered by.
I understand, but what is the... What's
sure, but I'm saying in terms of the formulation of the Gemara.
No, I understand. That is the Gemara's question. How does going to a Chacham help you? And the answer is Me'ikara. The answer to the Gemara, what differs from the original understanding and later, is the Me'ikara part.
Right.
In other words, the key is that you go learn Hochas Brachos before you violate the Aveira. Okay. There's something very fishy about the Nusach here. It almost sounds like there should have been something in the Bryce or something of that nature. Maybe not. Anyway...
Do the manuscript say anything?
I don't think so. I believe not. Okay, so the next, one general comment about the question of Me'ila. What is the din? What's the din if you're not sure whether you made a bracha on food or not?
Don't say bracha.
So the Shulchan Aruch paskens, you don't make a bracha. There is a very interesting comment Rabbi Kiva Eger has on Shulchan Aruch. It's in Simin Kuf. Where is it? I want to say it's Kuf Samach Zayin, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I think it's later than that. Ricky Vager says, he points out that there is a Marsha in Psachim Daf Kuf Bezam and Aleph who quotes, I'm not sure, is it the Rashbam? I think it's the Rashbam, although in the printed Shulchan Aruch it says Rashba, but it's actually the Rashbam in Psachim. The Marsha interprets, the Rashbam doesn't say this, but the Marsha interprets Rashbam as holding that if you're not sure whether or not you made a bracha on the food, you're not allowed to eat the food. Now, of course, there's a problem because you can't make a bracha either. Stomach bracha levatala. So they talk about that. It's not the mainstream sheet. However, it seems to be based upon this notion that eating without a bracha is a form of me'ila. And me'ila is not just, it's not just you're not mekayim a mitzvah, there's some type of iser involved. Okay? It's certainly, even if you don't accept that lalacha, it certainly highlights the strength of this second sugya in terms of the way it views eating without a bracha. It's not simply that you're failing to give shevach to Ribbono Shel Olam, but there's an actual iser involved. Shlomo?
According to Akiva Heger's interpretation of the Rashbam, there's really nothing you can do.
The Marsha doesn't say explicitly. He might hold that you make a second bracha. Now, the way Rabbi Kiva, I don't understand Rabbi Kiva Eger, but he suggests, it sounds like he's explaining it in a case where you think that you just made a bracha on this food, but you're not sure. So the problem is that if you don't do anything now, you may have a bracha levatala. Right.
If you do, then there's definitely you get a bracha.
No, because maybe you didn't make a bracha yet. The reason why you make another bracha is because maybe you didn't make a bracha on this food. So by making, it sounds like what he says there is that by making another bracha, it's not really no hefsed because either way there's a safek bracha levatala. Yeah.
What do you mean either way?
Again, it only works in a case where the food is in front of you and either you think you might have made a bracha and not eaten from it, or not. So, he says, manushach, there's going to be a safek bracha vatala. If you don't eat, because you can't make another bracha, since it's a safek whether or not you made a bracha vatala, and by not eating, the bracha will have been vatala.
Okay.
Whereas, and if you do make a bracha, so maybe you already made one bracha and the second one's vatala. But either way, it's still going to be the same suffix bracha vatala, so therefore you can make another bracha and eat something. That's what it almost sounds like.
Why not just make a bracha and eat it?
Because it's a suffix me'ila. You're not allowed to.
Food.
What?
So make one with your food.
Yeah. I know, I understood what you were saying.
I'm just saying, why making a big deal?
Is there such thing as we don't normally assume
Harry.
We normally assume who says that?
Rambam.
No, I don't think so.
Didn't we just
I think he says Lo Hashmi Eliyos. No, I don't think we say that if you Mahar and you don't Where's the Rambam?
What about the case of the Balkari? Bracha.
That's because he can't make another bracha. So let him be maharer.
So let him be maharer.
But let him not eat. We don't say let him not eat.
Yeah, but the Balkari can't starve. I don't know what this guy's going to do, but he's not going to eat this food. He's going to wait. I don't know. Okay.
Where's this
remediator? I think it's Simon. I want to say it's Simon Kufsam Asayim, but that might be wrong. It's like the last sif in a Simon in the Shulchan Aruch, where they talk about if you're not sure whether you made a bracha or not, you can eat with, you eat without a bracha. Okay. Anyway, so that said, moving on. So Amar, go ahead. Who am I? Distinguished reader, whoever that is, read for me. Yes, go ahead.
Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Adana Min Olam Hazeh Olam Bracha Ki'ilu Nehena Mekotei Shemayim. Shemar Hashem Aretz Umunuah.
So here already it makes more explicit, right? So Rashi himself in the earlier part points out why it's Me'ila, pointing to the Gemara two lines later. So, fine. Rav Levi Rami Ksiv.
Rav Levi Rami Ksiv, Hashem Aretz Umunuah, Ksiv, Hashemayim Shemayim Lashem Ba'aretz Hazeh Olam Hazeh.
Okay. Fine, the same notion. Amar, yes. I suspect that Lokasha probably is found in the mouth of the Amorim as well. I think so. I'm not sure, but I think so. Yes?
Back when we were deriving, when we were trying to derive brachot from the Gilulim, it made sense to only talk about food. Like, once we said the Svara, and now these Pesukim, which talk about, you know, the whole Aretz, like, shouldn't there be brachot for sitting in your comfortable chair and just putting anything that's nev? I mean, like, why are we only talking about brachot that has to do with food when it's a Svara based on anah?
So, for starters, I suspect that Birchas Hananin are generally limited to Hanos that enter the body. And sitting on your lazy boy chair is not Davar Shenichnas. I don't even think when you do Sicha, you don't make a bracha. It's only if you smell or you eat, you ingest. So that's probably why.
Where you see,
what's that?
It's a different kind of bracha.
That's a question. Whether or not that's really, I don't know. Think we don't call this birchas hananin. Those would really be called birchas hashavach.
Okay, yeah, yes. Different kind of bracha.
Okay, so now go ahead.
Squeaks Pasha.
Okay. finish the meme, right? Yeah. A very, very difficult Haggadah. Chazal do sometimes read Pesukim in a way that doesn't resemble what we would think to be Pshat. And this is certainly no exception. The Pasuk is Gozel. What does the Pasuk say? Gozel avivimo v'omer ein pasha. Chaver hu lishmashchis. The Pshat is if one steals from his parents and says there's nothing wrong with that. Why is there nothing wrong with that?
It's going to be mine anyway.
Okay. Spoken like a true only child. Right? It's going to be mine anyway. So he says ein pasha. So that person, chaver hu leish mashchis, he's a friend of destructive people. Okay, now, so apparently what happens in this case, so gozel aviv imo, aviv avicha shabbat shemayim fine, imo, why is imo Knesset Yisrael? What's that? Well, Knesset is feminine because in the mashal, of Shir HaShirim, so certainly the way it's traditionally understood, and not just Shir HaShirim, Yecheskel, so Knesset Yisrael is described in some way as a mother, sister, daughter, And in this case, if Aviv is, and the relationship between the Ribbono Shalom and Knesset Yisrael is compared to that of a husband and wife, so therefore if Aviv is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Imo is Knesset Yisrael. Thank you. Then the question is, can you have Hotza Shem Shemayim Levatala if you're only Mivarech Belibo? Probably not, yes. That's the pasuk that's standardly quoted from Minha Yisrael, actually. I suspect that's why. One of the sources that you can't, you know, violate Minhag is Shema B'nei Yisrael V'chal Titosh Torah Simecha. Right? So, the strange thing here is, firstly, there's a circularity here. How do you know that the Gozel here is talking about someone who eats without a bracha? The Gemara never really demonstrates. He says, anyone who eats without a bracha, kol nena menol zabal bracha, kilu gozel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Knesset Yisrael. Shenemar gozel avivim omer mpasha, chorish mashchis. Well, but how do you know that gozel is referring to eating without a bracha? Maybe it means someone who steals. So,
well, it makes sense based upon what we said earlier. Kam kodam bracha, kam racha bracha. Right? It's your parents or it's God's, right? Before you make the bracha, before you.
No. I understand, but the pasuk doesn't teach you that. What, you're telling me they were only quoting the pasuk to teach you that stealing from parents is asher? And since HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael are compared to, you know, Aviv Imo, therefore it's stealing the bracha, what's the point of the pasuk? If you already know that assumption, that it's Gezel, what do you mean? Of course you're stealing. What's the chiddush of the pasuk? How does the pasuk, you know, it's talking about brachas at all? So Rashi's explanation, Rashi explains here, that gozel, that a person who's gozel in pasha, other people learn from his behavior, and therefore he's a chaver who lishis chote umachti. I still don't understand. How do you understand, therefore, that the gezel is talking about a bracha, Shlomo?
It could be, if you look at the entire Mishnah, like a few second before, it says obedan masoyis alafem v'radei breaking sarish ish amenus rav brachos. Being they're taking the pasuk from Mishnah from a context where.
You think that Rav Brachos is the Italian here?
No, but meaning it talks about lechem, it talks about brachos.
Okay.
I don't know. Again, shot clearly isn't that.
I understand. Brachos, okay. I don't understand that part. There's a second part I don't understand, which at least I can give an explanation for, even though if I have no way of knowing this is correct. Which is, what is the connection to Yeravam ben Nevat? Why is Yeravam ben Nevat called an Ish Mashchis? Now Rashi's pshat is that he was chote umachti as a rabbim is nice, but how does the pasuk describing ish mashchis in any way relate to Yeravam? Now I should point out that there's a girsa in the Yalkut Shimoni. It's not found in any kisvayat of our Gemara that chaver hu li Yeravam ben Nevat shehechti es Yisrael avihim shebashamayim. Now that girsa works very nicely with Rashi's approach. There's only one problem. It doesn't fit in the Gemara at all, because the whole point is chaver hu l'ish mashchis, not l'ish chotei. So what is the connection then between, why is Yeravam referred to as the ish mashchis? Gabe, just turn it back on. I'm getting warm. I'm sure you guys are getting warm behind me. Thank you. So why do you think that he's a chaver? Why is Yeravam called an ish mashchis? No, it's a fair question. I could have picked any numerous other biblical Rishayim.
Yeah, because the first one to really systematically institute a program of the Zara.
Yeah, and?
You can pick anybody, you pick your Rabbah.
I could think of worse. Menashe.
I don't know.
Achav outstripped the Yeravam.
That's fine. Without Yeravam's precedent, those would have happened.
Okay, and why is this an Ish Mashchis? Ami?
Actually,
But then you're not talking about Avodah Zarah anymore. You're talking about fighting. But you rather split the kingdom al pi tzivu hanavi. Okay, I think there's maybe more of a time. Go ahead. Anybody else, Moshe? You know. It's possible, Eitan. Well, yes, but. I think there may be more of a language tie in Chaim.
I was going to say that he destroyed the Jewish nation as a whole. Maybe it was.
But again, that was Al Pi Tzivui. That was Achiyah Shiloni's command. So, again, I don't know the answer to this question. The one thing that occurred to me is that one of the things in particular that is associated with Hashkasa is Avodah Zarah, and perhaps even more specifically, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Leich. Lechreid, ki shiches amecha, and what was their hashchasa? Asulahem, egel masecha. Who was responsible for the golden calves in Jewish history? The Jews in the Midbar, and then Yeravam ben Nevat set up two golden calves, one in Basel and one in Dun. So I do wonder if there is a connection that's being made of hashchasa to the Egle Hazal. Other than that, I really have no clue. It's just it's a strange idiom anyway. Shehishches es Yisrael lahavim shebashamayim. Right, and the truth be told, the interpretation of splitting the kingdom that a couple of you offered, well, it's nice, except that that's not Lavim Shabbatayim, that would be Shehishchas Es Yisrael. It does seem to refer to some type of spiritual destruction. So that's the only link that I can think that one can make. Did anybody look up the parallel to this Gemara for context? No, apparently, but it won't help you anyway. Go ahead. You know, there's a famous story about Dr. Soloveitchik, I don't know if it's true or not, it's probably true, when he taught Ketzan Mevarchin, and they were asked, what's the difference? He came in and asked, what's the difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi on this thing? And he went down the line, and nobody knew. And finally he said, you dolts, there is no difference, and he stormed out. So, in this case, none of you looked at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but I'm not storming out, and it wouldn't have helped you. That's the word I heard. What's that?
It was really Ketzan Mevarchin?
Unless it was Truma, so he did them together, and it was back year 2 years in a row or whatever. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But
so,
anyway,
are we expected to look up all parallels of you?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just I didn't know.
So,
yes.
This is actually what we noticed is that this also doesn't have.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say.
It
doesn't
Yeah. What's your excuse? Okay. You didn't think to look at the Yeravam Sugyas in Chela because he's one of the Malachim who have no. Fine. I probably, when I was looking on this, because I was wondering about Nusach, I might have discovered it by searching for the other ones, but anyway. I don't know, how did I know it was in Sanhedrin? Not entirely clear to me, but anyway.
You have to go to the Sugyas here at
night. I'm sorry, tremendous.
Okay.
Nada?
Why did the last part of the human reading interpretation mean? Once you interpret God as Avicha and, you know, then, like, it's negative enough. Like, why do you need to associate with anybody?
Because everybody in the mashal has to stand for something. Right, that's what a mashal is. You know, I don't know if it's connected to it, but Chazal had this notion that it's a machlokus about how you deal with it in dreams. But one view is that every dream has some derei batal on it, which means not everything in the dream stands for something. The other view is that once one part of the dream is batal, because it doesn't stand for something, everybody else falls apart, which is how some of the Midrashim understand why Yaakov said to Yosef, Havonavani vimchavachachal shtachmas lachaartza, that he went to be motzi the kinnah from his brother's hearts by saying, how ridiculous is it? Your mother's not alive, so she's not coming, and just as that part of the dream won't be fulfilled, so too none of it will be fulfilled. So there may be this notion that the best form is to try to make sure that everything in the mashal has a nimshal. Okay.
Good question. Why are we supposed to be doing the other sugya?
What's that?
Why are we supposed to be doing the other sugya?
Yeah, we're still finishing reading through. We will get to Karam Ravai. We'll even get to Karam Ravai, I think, today, but we still never finished the opening piece, so.
Oh.
Okay, I apologize for that. Okay, Jeremy, keep going. Any other questions about this or comments? Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, that's nice. So that makes sense. You know, the any of you who've ever worked on a computer and had the computer crash in the middle of you on a document?
Yeah.
So when it crashes in the middle of a document and you lose everything, that's where lakachti degani biito. When you manage to say before that happens, that's yasafta degonecha. Okay, so you understand the difference. Okay, so in this case, one is a sign of divine displeasure and one is a sign of divine pleasure. So, fine. Tana Rabbanan. Fine. So we have a machlokas etanoi, and whether or not yasafta diganecha is like we saw in the previous memor, Chanin bar Papa is a bracha, meaning that you work hard and you eat from the fruits of your labor, or whether that's a klala because the ideal lifestyle is that you shouldn't have to work at all.
But isn't the other nine kabin of somebody else is worse than one kab of yourself, of your own?
No, we say rotza adam akav shalomi tishakav and shalachem. That's in the Mishnayos in Bava Metzia about when the peiros rot and what you're supposed to do with them in a pikadon. I think it's in the third parak of Bava Metzia. But
I'm saying like therefore like you should be working. You should like
It's one thing for me to have your fruits that you grow in your field, but if I have my own slaves who grow it for me, it's my fruits.
Oh,
so
it's not like you doing the work.
No, I don't think that's a function of enjoyment of the labor and the sense masayadai lispire. I think it's the sense of firstly he likes the fruits of his field, even if it's not being done with his yadayim, but those are his.
Okay.
So anyway. So Rabbi Shimon is here is advocating the Kolal philosophy. Well, not exactly. He's not advocating the Kolal philosophy. He's arguing that in a perfect world, this is what would happen. He doesn't argue that they had actually reached utopia. But nonetheless, he's saying that in a perfect world, so others would take care of your work, and you would be able to sit and learn, and that's when your Torah would be nases. The Gemara responds, it continues on this theme. Amar. Okay, now there is a very famous diuk that was made from this. It wasn't made by the Biur Halacha, by the Mishnah Berurah. It was made by someone else, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes it. I don't know if he raises questions about it, but the diuk is fundamentally incorrect. What diuk has been made from this Gemara? What does the Gemara, what does Abaye say? Many did like Rabbi Yishmael, also Biyadan means, and they were successful, and many did like Rabbi Yishmael Bar Yochai, and they weren't successful. Now, there are those of the Medayik that harbe, but not kulam, meaning that a lot of people tried, but not everybody succeeded, but some people did succeed. Now, the truth is, when you read the Gemara doesn't say any such thing, nor does it allow room for such a diuk. All the Gemara says is that you had group X, a lot of people.
I remember
that's
that
correct.
Group which had a lot of people.
Yes, harbe did X, and they succeeded. Harbe did Y, and they didn't succeed. It doesn't say, and Harbe of them didn't succeed. So based upon this Gemara, at least the conclusion of Abaye is very clear that Rabbi Shimon's opinion is not an opinion that people should follow. Let me put it that way. It's not a question of Rabbi Shimon is right or wrong. Maybe in the perfect world, Rabbi Shimon's opinion is correct, but we don't live in a perfect world. And in that vein, Rava said to his students, go ahead, Amalei Rava.
Amalei Rava, Rabbanan.
So he said, I don't want to see you around in Nisan or Tishrei, the times of the year, I guess, that they could have been working either their fields or hiring themselves out for the planting, gathering, or things of that nature. I don't want to see you then, because otherwise the entire year you're not going to be able to function. It's like those doctors who make aliyah, but they continue to come back for summers to practice their medicine here so that they can afford to live the rest of the year. So instead of it being, of course, Nisan and Tishrei, you know, it's it's Av and Eldel or something like that. But, you know, that's what it's like. The 2 months of the year where you're going to earn most of your parnasa, I don't want to see you here in front of me in the Beis Medrash, because it's going to inhibit, interfere with your ability to learn the rest of the year. Nada?
I remember reading, I think it was in the Steinfeld, the Central Talmud book.
Yes.
I don't know, like, the way things work in Bavel was like, there were 2 months of the year where all the Balaam can go to the yeshiva and spend a month at the yeshiva.
I don't know if these are the, I don't know that these are the Yarchei Chala, it's possible, but it's, but the point is that one may, those have to be the 2 months that the Talmidim can earn Parnasa in this context. I don't know that they're the same months that the Balaba, I don't know what the, even Yarchei Chala, I don't know whether they were really, what is everybody or what everybody means there. Yes, but we have this notion of Yarchei Chala, but I don't think that's what, I don't think it's connected here, yeah.
You've got 3 weeks to work then.
I understand. I would have expected, I'm not sure what it.
Expect
what's that?
Adar.
Season of Nisan.
Yeah, the only problem is that I don't know what around Nisan, unless you mean until after the Katsir.
Tekufat Nisan and Tekufat Tishrei. They are the first month in the season of three.
It could be. And what was Tishrei, you think, is the planting season?
Fruit.
Where's the planting? It's not Nisan. The general cycle in Eretz Yisrael is that you plant probably in Mar Cheshvan, because that's when the rains first start to come, and then you harvest in the spring, and then you let it dry in the fields over the summer, and then you gather it in towards the end of the summer, before Tishrei. So I don't know, it's for the purposes now, I don't know, but you may be probably right, it may refer more to the Tekufa or a period around it, but whatever it is for the moment, these are the periods of time where they could best procure their work, to be able to earn some parnasa for the rest of the year. Ezra?
Well, we do find, I'm at for a second, we do find them sitting in Marseille, Tekufa is Nisan often, right? So that would be fair enough.
Yeah, but Tekufa is Nisan is usually used in the context of formal calendar. So, anyway, I accept what you're suggesting, because it's hard to imagine them working over Yom Tov, but nonetheless, I'd imagine that, but I don't know exactly, you know, please, I beg of you. How does it come to mean that? Minaycha, we understand. That usually means to reach. I don't know. Look in. You know, go look in. What's his name? Sokolov. Now, this is one you probably got to go to Sokolov for. And a dictionary of Babylonian Aramaic. That's an expression, Matusa Minaycha. In fact, I think it's a Rabbah expression, because I think he uses. Is there a Yoma? Can you pass me a Yoma, please?
We use it in Malchei Yomase, in Slivas.
It might be, not the Matusa Minaycha. I believe. Yes, Amar Lahu Rava La Rabbanan, Bimatusa Minaychu, Lotersun Tarte Gehenim. He said, don't inherit two Gehenims. He was telling them, if you're not a Yirei Shamayim, then don't bother being frum. Because by choosing to do so, you end up having Gehenim in this world, and then Gehenim in the next world. That's what he says to them. Rashi explains. This is my way for this Ayin Bezen Bez. This is called Tamachacha Shein Tocha Kavaro, Eino Tamachacham. Ayin Bezen Bez Bezen Yoma. Does Rashi explain that line? The previous Memra was, Rav Yanai, Machus Rav Yanai, Chaval al Dales Le Darta, Vitar al Darte Ovid. Woe to the person who has no courtyard and he makes a fence for it. You know, that's like the Mel Brooks toll booth. And then the next line is, Amar Luhu Rav Alarban, Matus Vinechlo, Tertun Tarte Gehenim. Does Rashi say anything? Rashi says, Lios Yegeim Vamelim Bitorah Ba'olam Hazeh. So that seems to be a Rava expression. Where did this come from? Thank you. Yes, Jeremy?
Is there a consideration of at what point the statement is like Rabbi Shimon Bar-Yochai made the statement?
There's no way of knowing. Obviously, anyone who knows Rabbi Shimon Bar-Yochai knows that he had to hide from the Romans, and according to the story, he hid for 12 years in a cave, I think, and then he came out, and everywhere he would look would burn up because he couldn't understand why people... No. First they came out, and he couldn't understand why people were engaged in, you know, mine d'alma, and everything would burn up. And then the Abasco came out and said, go back to your cave. You came out to destroy my world. Go back to your cave. Okay, so go be a caveman again. And then he went back into the cave for another year, I think, and then they came out, and then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, ironically, if you know his later biography, it's very interesting, everywhere he would look would burn, and he would burn, and Rabbi Shimon would heal, and then finally what caused his son to cool down was seeing the guy running before Shabbos carrying two hadassim, and they asked him, why are you carrying these four? He said, one's for Zachar and one's for Shamar. So I don't know in what stage Rabbi Shimon, you know, uttered these words, but obviously there's obviously a connection in his worldview between these two stories or agadas or two maimers, whatever they are. Now, the interesting part is a comment that I think I made a little while ago, is that the Gemara doesn't say that Rabbi Yishmael is right and Rabbi Shimon is wrong. Abaye says that many did like Rabbi Yishmael and they were successful, many like Rabbi Shimon were not successful. Clearly, Abaye's advice is that you should be following Rabbi Yishmael, not Rabbi Shimon. In light of that, look at the next Agada until we get down to the end of this, the next Sugya. Go ahead, Jeremy. Zo-vizo. We have to try that whether he's really married or not. If he's... I'm only kidding. Even if you say Tabazu, you're still married. Okay. If you're going to say it in advance, I won't marry you, but nonetheless, you're still married. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Okay, so you can see, I think in many ways what the Gemara is coming to do with this Agada is to point out that it's not necessarily a function of Rabbi Shimon being wrong and Rabbi Yishmael being right. It's that Bo-re lo kedoros harishonim doros ha'achronim. Right, and in Doros HaRishonim, who made Taras on Keva, maybe not completely like Rabbi Shimon, most like Rabbi Shimon, so Zevezeh and Niskayim of Yadan. But in Doros HaChronim, Sha'asu Malachtan Keva, V'Taras on Arai, so Zevezeh lo Niskayim of Yadan. Obviously, I think it's worth commenting, this is obviously a very, very important Gemara for multiple reasons, both in terms of how it relates to the way we view engaging in a Parnas and engaging in going out into the world, and also how we view Talmud, the midst of Talmud Torah, and it relates to the question of Torah Mada, the question of taking out time from Torah to study other subjects. For the moment, I just want to sort of make the following comment in terms of the Parnas aspect. It's very clear that Kol Torah Sheinima Parnasa Sofa Betela. That's the reality of so much of the world. Believe it or not. Many people, are sitting in Kollel are not always learning. You know, yes, there are those who are certainly learning all their lives, but there are many, many people who are not at all suited for it, even if it were an ideal philosophy, and who are not learning. There are many people maybe who could theoretically have been suited for it, but are still not learning. And at a certain point, the Parnassa really does become a very serious issue. Just ask any graduate student, they can tell you that as well. The only difference is the graduate student understands that he's there for a limited term. In this context, I might parenthetically note, Rav Schechter, who presented his standard, I don't want to call it a tirade, but it's a strong statement against the Kollel philosophy a couple of Shabbos ago, I don't know if anybody was here. Has always said that, you know, we don't believe in Kollel, and our Kollel, I know guys know their Kollel, Rashi Kollel here, our Kollel are not a lifetime commitment. They're basically, this is not his description, but I would describe, basically like graduate school. It's the understanding that a community invests in certain people, gives them the time to prepare for a certain type of intellectual career, if you want to call it that way. It doesn't, can be intellectual, can be non-intellectual. But the understanding is that when you've finished your time of training, of reading, of learning and studying, then you go out and you make your contribution to the world. And your contribution to the world doesn't mean remaining in the ivory tower forever. So anyway, I think that the way of tradition the very strong weight of tradition until very recently has not been in favor of what we might call the kol lifestyle. There might, maybe there are a handful of individuals, yechidei skula, for whom it's worth the community to invest. But even that, I don't know of any of the Rishonim, certainly none that we know of, who weren't in some sense communal leaders, dayanim, and things of that nature. There was no such thing as you just sat and learned. Is the Gra the first one?
He was on the community.
Okay, so maybe that's the first time, but what's that? I understand. So I'm just observed that it's a. I would only say, Ezra, that even though it runs against the weight of tradition, if you bring me another Vilna Gaon, I'll support that as well. But
I don't think that's a proof at all, because Arosh Kolel is also in Kolel, but he's giving back by training those who are in the Kolel.
And he's but the point teaching is but the point is he's teaching. That is a form of. That is a form of.
By definition, the Rishonim and the early Acharonim were also giving back.
No, but they also were engaged in more direct things, even with the Tzibur. In other words, these were, the person who's a posei is also giving back to the Tzibur, even if he's not giving regular shiurim. The person who just sits and learns and is not a posei, it is not a melamed, who just sits and learns, and maybe if someone is really writing svarim that will actually, be worthy of printing, also that maybe that's in the same category, so where the Vilna Gaon might fit. But other than that, right. But other than that, there is no notion. So in that sense, even the Vilna Gaon wrote svarim and with tremendous impact, there's no notion that I just sit and learn, which would be the case for the Hamon of people who would sit and learn today. So at least, certainly there's no, I don't know of any real precedent for that in tradition. I don't think the Vilna Gaon serves as one either.
Wouldn't Rambam say that even those people, even those Rishonim did make their money off teaching and being communal leaders and whatnot, even they were wrong?
So I will say the following. If you read the Rambam's long essay in the Perusha Mishnayos and Avos, I think on Al Taseu Kardon Lach Barbo, what's that? But if you actually read what the Rambam says, the Rambam seems to be more attacking those who demand that the community support them, who in effect argue that it's an obligation of the community to support them. If someone wants to voluntarily support them, or if the community voluntarily decides that it's for the best interest of the community to support such an enterprise, so that is certainly... the Rambam doesn't say that that's invalid. I mean, if you think about it, his early life arrangement was his brother was the one who was Yisachar and Zevulun. If you actually read the piece there, he's attacking those who would, in effect, cast taxes upon the Tzibur and argue the Tzibur is obligated to support them. Not in a situation where the community has voluntarily undertaken such an enterprise. In the same way that the Gemara in the 13th parak of Subos of Shnei Dayanei Xelos, the way the Gemara there describes what they used to do in Yerushalayim is you had Malamdei Tinokos, you had Dayonim, you had all these people who were religious functionaries, and they took their schar from the Truma Salishka. That's how they were paid, by the community. But it's one thing when the community decides it needs these functioning institutions and functionaries, whatever you want to call them. And it's another thing when Talmidei Chachamim argue that you mechuyev to support me. So there's a very big difference between the two.
So what about, a lot of these kolelim, they're not literally forcing people to pay for them. There are wealthy people who are
paying for them. The truth is, not kolelim itself, where people want to support, in itself is not inherently a bad thing. It's not inherently wrong. Yeah. I mean, the question of whether it's productive is a separate question of productive and common resources. No, I didn't say so, but... No.
Like the level.
What? No.
They accept the money from
other people. Yeah, no. There's a difference between accepting tzedakah and someone coming to arrangement, what we call the Yisachar Zvulun type arrangement. Right? When somebody says, I want you to learn and I'll pay you to learn because I think it's a benefit to the community of Klal Yisrael, I don't think that's the same thing as a person who casts himself upon the tzibur, who doesn't have a parnasa, and therefore he's genuinely an ani, and therefore the community, supports him. So that person has undermined their own dignity. It's not the same thing as having a formal institution. The problem becomes when everybody does it. When it's a widespread phenomenon, when it's economically, in many ways, not really viable, and it's not in the community's interest either. You know, even if you somehow manage to raise the funds, you know, it's wasting communal funds because most of these people should be doing something that's more productive. So anyway, I think it's very clear from the Gemara that there's no basis. It's very clear that the Gemara's preference in the real world is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon. And maybe in utopia, maybe in a perfect world, you know, the opinion might be reversed. But we don't live in a perfect world. If an Abaye, you know, even if Doros HaRishonim were almost the perfect world, where Asu Tarasa and Kevam Lach Danarai, already by the time of Abaye, you know, it was no longer a perfect world. And if for Abaye it wasn't the perfect world, certainly for us it's not a perfect world. Okay.
Who are these Doros HaRishonim? Is it mythical, or is it people at the time of the Mikdash, or is it people at the time of...
Don't use that word, mythical. Doros HaRishonim, I'm guessing, are the Doros of Tanaim. In this context, is what I would guess. No, it's even earlier than. It has to be earlier Tanaim, because quoting Rahu the Bari Loi. So
is it like,
I assume it's Zugos. Zugos.
Yeah.
Why
can't it be figurative to
just mean an ideal world?
Yeah. Okay. But presumably he had. No, I presume he has in mind a certain particular time period.
Okay.
You know, it might be the period of the Zugos or something like that. You know, before the descent into anarchy, before the Churban, would be my guess. In other words, I think those would be viewed as the golden days. You know, up until the time of, you know, Tamid Eshamai V'Hillel, when Rav Samach Locus B'Yisrael. What's that? That's correct. But the point is, they were functioning for the community. They did two things. They gave up Nachala. And they served as the spiritual leaders, teachers, judges of the people. And in exchange for that, you support them with Trumas and Maestras. Right. Okay.
So nowadays, over
I don't want to say who said this because I didn't hear it from him, but a particular Rebbe here was quoted as saying, someone said, you know, can you go work on Tisha B'Av? And the Rebbe's response is, yeah. So some guy said, yeah, but it says in Shulchan Aruch, Ein Aruah Bo Siman Bracha La'olam. So the Rebbe responded and said, yeah, but it pays the rent money, so, you know. So that's what I say to you, okay? It's very nice that Zev is Elo also B'Yadam. At the end of the day, it pays the rent. So the fact is that even though Asu Malachtan Keva and Tarsan Arai, it pays the rent. The other way, it doesn't pay the rent. So, I mean, look, unfortunately, in many cases, you hear about this in communities where the result of not having sources of income results in violating various averus, starting with defrauding the government. There are certain communities in which it may very well be the case that half the town, you know, is living on, you know, Section 8, you know, in some cases where the parents own the houses, and all sorts of things that I've heard about. I don't know them firsthand. And I should add in that context, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that accepting tzedakah from Goyim is a very big chilul Hashem. A very big chilul Hashem. That's what the Gemara says in Bava Basra. What's that?
Of course it is.
It sure is. What else is it?
It's not.
It absolutely is. It's just given from the community chest. You know, and I would venture to guess that what's that?
People don't give taxes because they want to. They give it because they have to.
I understand. But there is a concept of ma'asin ala tzedakah. Sometimes we force people who can afford it to give tzedakah. So yes, you know, I don't think it counts technically as tzedakah. I once heard someone say that they thought that maybe it should count against their ma'asik suffam allotment. The truth be told, for all the rabid right wingers who don't like welfare, whether you like it or not like it, it comprises such a tiny fraction of your taxes. You know, when you compare it against, you know, the Medicare, Medicaid, the defense budget, you know, you're talking about probably 1% already. So, you know, if someone really wanted to write down that small portion, they shouldn't, but it amounts to less than you think. But
you say Medicare and Medicaid are also tzedakah, though?
Nobody seems to regard them in the same way. I understand, but besides, no, people paid it, except for Medicaid, Medicare and Social Security and defense budget are not stuck. Medicare,
okay,
people paid
fine,
in. People paid into the system.
So
now, people paid into the system for that. Medicaid is for the poor.
Okay.
Yes. What do you mean? It at least eliminates one particular piece of it. Yes. It's kind of funny because to be taking payments from the government that you might not recognize as legitimate or might hold that you don't have to pay your taxes to is kind of interesting and so on. It leads to all sorts of funny kind of positions because you don't have means of parnasa. So anyway, it's clear from the Gemara that it's not viewed as a lifestyle. And even though the diuk that's made, that harbe, but maybe some people, is not a good diuk, it's probably true for a community. It's probably not a bad thing for a community to have some of its best and brightest that we could use certainly a lot more of the best and brightest going into Avodas HaKodesh, but certainly having occasionally some of the most select people who learn for at least for an extended period of time because they will give back eventually to the community. Okay. I'm going to leave off. We can read the next statement. I don't want to go into it at great length. The whole discussion has shown it. It's not really our issue. It relates to something else. So just read it and then we'll come back. Go ahead. The Amar.
The Amar, not about our son, Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, no? Remember Rabbi Yochanan, the Shura Yehuda, Rabbi Yomai. Bora Yishaloki, the Rodder Shanim, the Rodder Achmanim. Rodder Shanim, Hayu Machin, the Rodder Kan, Derach Tarkasimon.
Traxibon, it's a Greek word. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Okay. I don't want to go into great length to evaluate the relationship between this and what we call Miracha Kri Gemara Lacha the Paris. Many of the Rishonim say that this refers to a situation where you bring your completely unprocessed produce, grain. That's one of the examples that's given here. Machnisan Satua B'Mochala. Not here, I think it's given in the fifth parak in Brachos. They quote that as an example. And if you don't process the grain at all, and then you bring it in, any processing you do after that, it will not be mechuyev min haTorah and trumas and maisros after it's entered the house. There are lots of details to work out, but the bottom line is, when you harvest grain or produce from the ground, it's not chayev in trumas and maisros normally until after you have a gemar malach on it, which means you've processed it, and you've at least, let's say, in the case of grain, reduced it to the kernels, you know, everything else winnowed and sifted out. Somehow, even the way at least the Ritva explains here, and I'm not sure if all Rishonim agree with this, but that if you don't do a Gemar Malacha, but you bring it into the house, and then you do the Gemar Malacha in the house, it will forever be Pater from Trumas and Maisos. Because once you've had a Rias Panei Abayis, I don't want to go into the details, once you had a Rias Panei Abayis, and it's still completely unprocessed, it's never going to be chayv in trumas and maisos again. So once upon a time, people would engage in a hara. Once upon a time, people would go out of their way to make sure that they be mechayev the grain in trumas and maisos. That was Doris Harishonim, and Doris Achronim engaged in a harama to avoid having to give trumas and maisos. Shlomo.
Doing it there.
Right. So Rashi says here differently. The Rashi says that you can continue to eat, you just can't eat achilas keva. See, generally, if you're out in the field and you're processing your grain, but you haven't finished processing it, you can eat achilas arai, and you can feed to your behema even achilas keva for the behema. That's called arai with respect to us. But so the purpose of bringing it into the house like that is, for example, you could eat arai, you could feed to your behema. So. But the Ritva, I think the Ritva himself says, or quotes a Shita, that once you have Rias Panei Abayis, before you have a Gemara Malacha, Lagamri Pati Yukita, however you like, and nothing will ever be Kovei. It's very odd. It's very odd. It requires creating all sorts of in-between categories. Because after all, if you assume that Gemara Malacha on the grain anywhere is Mechayivit and Trumas Amaisos, what is it about that you brought it into the Bayis that all of a sudden says now that the Gemara Malacha is no longer counts? It's a little complicated. But anyway, here it's obviously brought as the second statement, the twin statement of Amar Rabbi Chanan Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Now, obviously, I shouldn't make one other point in this. Who's quoting Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai? Rabbi Yochanan. How many years do you think they overlapped?
They're about 100 years apart. 75, 100.
Yeah, they never, most likely never saw each other. Rabbi Yochanan, I think, maybe did not even see... Either he didn't see Rebbe, or he only saw Rebbe from behind where he sat in the base of Medrash. He saw him from behind. But Rebbe was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. Rabbi Yochanan never saw Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. Rabbi was Talmud of Rabbi Meir, whatever. He never saw them. When he's quoting, and he's often sometimes quotes Rabbi Shimon Bachai also, it's obviously understood Mishum in this case means in the name of, not a direct quotation. That is, by the way, what the word Mishum is anyway, in case you're wondering. Mishum is, in many of the cases, it will be Mishem. But obviously, it's not a direct quotation. It's, I don't know if it's deliberate. Amar, it's not Amar Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. It's Amar Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. They say in his name.
Okay, fine.
Any further comments? Yes, Ethan.
Do we treat that any differently?
No. No, it should. Just a question. You know, with the Chazal paid very careful attention to trade in chains, to quoting maybe Davar B'Shem Omro. There's no nafkamina here. No, it's obvious if you're aware. Many B'nai Beis Medrash are not aware of chronology. The notion of Rabbi Akiva having a conversation with Rav Ashi wouldn't surprise them. So, but most of the Rishonim were very well aware of it because you get a lot of Tosafim scattered throughout Shas. You know, how could so and so beat so and so? But they whatever. So anyway, so fine. So if you didn't happen to notice that there's a little bit of a generation gap there, so now you know.
How would bringing your things in the window help?
The assumption is once it's entered the bias.
Can't you bring it in the door?
No, because the Rias Pnei Bas will be mechayev you. The Shar is mechayev you.
It's mechayev you in
Trumas and Maisus. It's Kovea for Trumas and Maisus, yeah.
But that's because you already had a Gemar Melach outside.
I always work with the assumption that Minat Torah you need Gemar Melach and Rias Pnei Bas. I haven't had a chance to dig to see if the Rishonim actually say B'Feirush that way. That's not the way. The Rishonim explain. Ritva certainly doesn't explain that way. He has a three part chiluk. He assumes that he assumes that the din of Rias Pnei Abayis is for a case where you haven't mamish, you processed it some, but you haven't completely finished the processing. So it's not chayiv yet, but the partial processing plus Rias Pnei Abayis is mechayiv min haTorah, and partial and full processing on its own is mechayiv min haTorah. Zero processing brought into the window. I guess maybe he would hold that even zero processing brought it through the door is also mechayiv. But if you have zero processing and you bring it in through the window, then it always remains pater, something like that.
You were talking here about Doros Acharonim versus Doros Rishonim, mm-hmm. But if you go earlier than that and you go to Doros HaKadmonim, then presumably this was a problem.
Why?
But they do this trick, bringing in the window.
They didn't do it in Doros Rishonim. The point is, Doros HaChronim figured out these haramas and used them. The Doros HaRishonim were happy to be kind the midst of Trumas and Isis.
Don't we have a quote about the people doing that?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing? Because before you were saying it was a neutral thing. It just is. The fact that they did Torah before Malacha and we don't, but it's...
The point is the ideal society is one in which a person makes Torah so kevam lach dan rai. It's just an ideal society. Now,
it doesn't work.
Now, I don't know in the case of the maaser that it doesn't work. That's just, you know, it's reflective of a general trend. Okay. Fine. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Kerem Ravai. So the first source I wanted to look at in this was the Yerushalmi. A very brief Yerushalmi. Do we have any Oav Eitzion Yerushalayim here who would like to read for me?
Which Yerushalmi is this?
Anybody who hasn't volunteered to read yet. Go ahead. Gabe,
which
you can read.
Is this?
The one in Master Shani. It's two lines. Okay. Two lines on my sheet, at least. Kerem Ravai.
Yeah. Kerem Ravai. Zuga. Or
Zuna.
Zuna. It's in okay. Konam Reim Zuga. I saw it was Zuna in the other one. Sha'al Rebbe. So which way do we teach it in the Mishnah? Are the words Kerem Ravai or are the words Netar Ravai? As you explained it last week.
Just keep going. Don't fill in anything what I said. Good. Amar.
Bukun Shalun Rabbi Yitzhak Ruba Divahanislei Kol Masnisa. He said to them, go ask Rabbi Yitzhak Ruba, by whom I've run all the Mishnayas by him to check their language. They went out and they asked him. He said to them, the first ones possibly the first three Mishnayos are Tarem Lavari, and the last one, the second one, the latter ones are Medel Lavari. Rabbi Zaira Mikbal Savaya Nahavon Biyomoy Rabbi Yitzchak Ruba. The love of Hadun called Masniyos Avinei.
Okay.
Zaira used to complain about the old men who had been alive at that Rabbi Yitzchak Ruba, and I guess we're still alive at that Rabbi Zaira, and yet had not run their Mishnayos by him to check.
Okay. So what's going on according? What's the machlokas according to the Yerushalmi? Chaim, there is no machlokas. Yerushalmi doesn't even present there being a machlokas. It's just a question of what was the nusach of the Mishnayos. To the best I can tell, in the Yerushalmi, there is no remez anywhere in the Yerushalmi to a machlokas about Netter Revai versus Kerem Revai. You'll have both the shonos appear. Your Mishnayos have both the shonos. There's no zikaron of any machlokas anywhere, as far as I can tell, in the Yerushalmi, about there being a man de omar kerem revai and a man de omar netter revai. There are mishnayos that are taught as netter revai, the mishnayos taught as kerem revai. Rav Yitzchak Ruba told them that the first one, and maybe the first ones, are kerem revai, and the latter ones are netter revai. Ezra? Mari Aponim is the Pnei Moshe's Tosfos. Meaning, he wrote both. But the Mari Aponim is his the essays. Yes. Yes, the fascinating Mari Aponim.
I read it quickly, but I mean, I think he says it explicitly, saying that they weren't asking about Kufa Divina. They were asking.
Correct. It's all about. Now, but you have to understand something. If you read the Mari Aponim in Brachos, in the beginning of Ketzah Mevarchim, there he tries to prove which one, Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe or Rabbi Chia, which one hold which way, because he's trying to prove that the Rambam was right when he paskin Netter Revai. So, ironically, everything he says here in Maaser Sheni works beautifully for what I'm arguing, meaning he acknowledges that all you see in the Yerushalmi is a machlokas over, or a question over Nusach. There's no debate over what the actual din is, because he assumes that he's saying that they seem all here to assume that the din is Netter Revai, they were just talking about the Girsa. Can someone answer Eyal's question? Why do they care what the nusach is if there's no nafgamina? Chaim?
How do we know if there's no nafgamina yet?
No. Gabe?
They're very sensitive to the language of Mishnayos. Mishnayos have to be reserved. If you're not going to preserve this, you're also going to preserve other things. So there is a
nafgamina. Well, to leave off the rest of it.
We're slow.
More frequently than you realize. This is later. This is a later interest. But if you look in the stum of the Gemara frequently, in many cases where, like the beginning of the fifth parak in Beitza, Mashilantan, Mashirintan, you have also, they were very interested in Gersos. Their Torah Shebal Peh, particularly the Mishnayos, became a text for them. It was an oral text, but it was a text for them, and they were interested in preserving it. You know, in the same way that you have a concept of Mishnah Lozazim, Mishnah Lozazim and Koma, then that may have to do partially with oral recitation, but it has to do with the sense of a text. You know, so I know that there are those who would like to believe that they're only ideas, but that is not the way Chazal related to the Mishnah. Certainly not the way they related to the Mishnah and the Brisos. They regarded them as texts.
Zuda was putting together a critical edition.
What's that?
Zuda was putting together a critical edition.
Okay, fine. So anyway, Rabbi Yitzchak was the big bucky in Mishnayos. Nadav? So the answer is it holds that the din is netta, because you would never use the term netta anywhere if the din didn't apply to all trees. The real question you want to ask, and this, the Mari Aponim is very useful for, why then, if there's no machlokas and din, why do the Mishnayos use the din kerem? Some of them use the din kerem. And what is his answer here? Very interesting. In fact, something he said struck a chord with me. One of them is, one of the three Mishnayos here, the first one said, the first one talks, the three Mishnayos at Kerem Revai speak about, number one, how you mark Kerem Revai, perhaps in the Shemitah year, so wayfarers don't take it without redeeming it, because they don't realize it's Revai. Because everything is Hefka in the Shemitah year, so it's mutter for them to take, but they don't know it's Revai. Number two, they want the din of Kerem Revai is Ola Yerushalayim. Excuse me. You're not allowed to redeem Revai within a certain radius of Yerushalayim, because they wanted Shukei Yerushalayim to be Mutar and Meperos. So the Mishnah uses the term Kerem Revai. And the third one, is with respect to a Mishnah that's found both in Adios and in Peah. It does not originate in Peah. It originates either here in Maaser Sheni by Revaya or originates in Adios, where they talk about, number one, does Revaya have Chomesh and Biur, Machlokes Beshamai Beselel? Number two, whether or not there's Peret and Ololos by Revaya, which is also Machlokes Beshamai Beselel. Now, that doesn't belong in Peah at all, because Peret and Ololos have nothing... the first half doesn't belong in Peah, because Chomesh and Biur have nothing to do with Peah. But it's in Peah because of Peret and Ololos. So the real origin of this block of material is either in Maaser Sheni or in Adios. So then, the Mishnah. So those are the three dinim. How you mitzayin Revai, so people know it's Revai. Number two, kerem Revai olam yushan lechol tzad. And number three, the din of homesh biur olos and peret by kerem Revai.
What was the second one?
Keremavai olam yushalayim, you know, mahalach, whatever, however far around. The Rambam in Hilchos Maaser Sheni at the Revai paskins that the Revai, but he says that the takana, that the Mishnah, that you're not allowed to redeem Revai within a certain distance yushalayim, is limited to grapes.
That's Mishnah number three. That's
Mishnah number two. What is the din?
Why you couldn't redeem it within the grapes?
Because they wanted there to be Paris available in Yerushalayim. If everybody is redeeming all the Paris, everybody comes, there's cash, and there's no food. They describe it more as a decorative element, but that could also be part of it. Some people are bringing food, but if they don't make sure there's enough food, it's not going to be beautiful. And everybody's carrying money, and there's no, you know, the shelves are bare. So the Rambam understood, even though he postulates that the Revai, that the din of Kerem Revai, when it's mentioned, happens to apply specifically to Kerem Revai. Not that Revai is Kerem Revai, but that one din, the Rabbanon, is Kerem Revai. Now, the third Mishnah, obviously, is only relevant to teach by Kerem Revai. Why? Because where does the din of Ololos and Peret apply?
Only with grapes.
Only by grapes. Remember, that was Shekein Yeshna Ololos that we saw. So, therefore, the third Mishnah must only be Kerem Revai Bedafka, not because the din of Revai only applies to Kerem, but because that particular aspect is only Shaykh to talk about by grapes. So, the Penei Moshe says that's why the first Mishnah as well, Agav Gra, is taught as Kerem Revai. There's at least one more case of Kerem Revai. I don't know if how many more there are. And that's in the Mishnah in Trumos that talks about whether or not Kerem Revai of a Nachri is, whether Nachri's Kerem is Chayav and Revai. I should point out there that at least Lagabe Trumos and Maisros Doraisa for many Rishonim, the only things that are Chayav and Trumos and Maisros Medoraisa and that you have to give Revai from are Revai. You bring Revai from grain? Most we shown him hold that only Dagon, Tior, Shri Yitzhar are Chayiv and Trumus and Maestros Min HaTorah. Only grain, the five grains, olives and grapes, and maybe it's just the oil and wine, according to some we shown him. Min HaTorah. So, what is Chayiv and Trumus Min HaTorah that's also Chayiv and Revai?
Olives
and grapes are the only two things, which, by the way, I think it's just a coincidence, but note in the first Sugya that the only things they managed to find the bracha for were the chameshes mina dagan and then zayis and kerem. But I think that's just coincidental. So it may be that the Mishnah in Trumos uses kerem revai because the only two species, one of the two species, that in fact was chayiv and trumos amaisus mina Torah and has a din of revai is are grapes. It certainly doesn't apply to all fruit trees. So, but it may very well be according to the Yerushalmi that the only issue involved, that everybody agrees that Revai applies by all creatures. It happens to be certain dinim of Revai, by de facto, happen to only be relevant by Kerem. Either because Ololos is only a mitzvah by grapes, or because the Takana de Rabbanon of Yerushalayim should be Muteris, but Shuke Yerushalayim should be Mutarim Beperos, only apply, they made the Takana only on grapes for whatever reason. Be that as it may, so it would appear from the Yerushalmi, there's no evidence, certainly in the Yerushalmi, that they held, that anybody held, that Neta Revai, that Revai was limited to Kerem. It's in that, I mentioned this in light, I don't know if I said this last week when I spoke about this, the Rashba was bothered by Akasha. The Rashba said, how can one of the Tuam Oroim say that the din is Neta Kerem Revai? After all, you have a Mishnah in Bikurim which says that Esro Geshavah Shavah Le'ilan B'shalosh Drachim B'shavah Le'yerek B'derech Echad. And one of the three ways in which the Elon is Shava, Esra, Geshava, Le'ilon is Revai. So you see that Revai applies by non-fruit trees. So the Rashba answers, he says, No! Everybody agrees. Even the Mandamar, even the Amora who says that it should be Kerem Ravai, agrees that there is a Shita Netta Ravai. And they're just arguing about the Nusach of these Mishnayos. Now, ironically, the Rashba doesn't go a step further, because obviously, in light of the Bavli, you can't assume that there's no actual Machlokas and Din. But the answer to the Rashba's question is very simple, according to the Yerushalmi. The fact that the Mishnah talks about Ravai Bein Esrog, that's because everybody holds this Ravai Bein Esrog. Everybody agrees that the Ravai applies by all fruit trees. The only question is there, what is the Nusach of certain Mishnayos? That's all. It does. The Rashba, in effect, came to not quite the same conclusion, but recognized that a major element of the Machlokes has to do with Girsa, not just with Din. And that even on the Omar Kerem Ravai would be Moda, that there is a Shita on the Tanaim that holds not the Ravai. It's
even
just
the one, even the early Amora.
Who says that? Yes. Ezra?
It's not possible. I mean, I accept the answer you said before to the last question, that you're preserving, but is it also possible that the question, at least, of Yerushalmi was based on the possibility that there is a difference? I mean,
it is possible, but there is no remes anywhere in the Yerushalmi. Look, the truth is, if not for this one sugi in Brachos, where the Stam of the Gemara interprets the Machlokas, there's no evidence anywhere in the Yerushalmi or elsewhere in the Bavli that there was a Machlokas about whether or not other fruit trees are Chayim Ravai.
Even Sota, there seems to be something there.
No, I don't think so. There's a Machlokas there where Kerem, where the Torah uses the word Kerem, whether or not it's all fruit trees, like the Tana of the Mishnah, or like Rebbe Zemiach, the Kerem Kemashma'o. It doesn't say Kerem, but the point is, I understand Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position. It makes perfect sense. The Torah says, "Bi'yishah shanata Kerem v'lo chilolav."
Okay. And that would be docked over there.
What? Correct. It doesn't say Kerem.
When it comes to
Ravai, it doesn't say Kerem.
It's a different.
Yeah.
He's not talking about.
The sheet of Kerem Ravai is an enormous chiddush if you say it in din, because there's no remez in the psukim to that. It sounds like kol eitz macho uvashanar v'yisya kol
priyo. So I could just continue to argue that you can't prove that the question wasn't.
I can't prove to you that the Yerushalmi holds there's no machlokas, but there isn't a shred of evidence in the Yerushalmi that there is.
I don't think there's a machlokas is the answer, but it's the question. The question could have been based on, like Yael said, why are they asking the question? Maybe.
It's possible. There's no way of, it's speculation. Yes. And the final question.
Okay, fine.
It's kind of a bodily.
I don't mean of you. I just mean of the time. Yes. Is it if it's Shavu L'chol Nefesh? You can ask. I'll. Go ahead.
Why does I don't understand what Rabbi Zeira was doing.
Mikbal. He was complaining. It's like when I get up and complain that guys don't do Shnayim Echad Targum, so they don't know basic things. So he's complaining that people didn't know the Nusach HaMishnayis because these Zakenim didn't bother to go out of their way to learn the Nusach HaMishnayis really well.
But why is he saying that here? Oh.
Yes. Yes. Okay. After you ask me a question. Okay. Good. I did say final question. So.